Again, I'd like to say good morning and welcome. I'm always glad to see my brother come back from his travels. I am a little worried based on the first slide I hear that he's maybe traveling too much, but I'm sure that this will come to fruition as he brings it. But I'd ask that you give our prayers to our brother that he would have that freedom of thought and that we'd be ready to receive of it. I give you our apostle, Brother Jay Moser.
Sorry for scaring you. We're on. Good. Good morning. It's good to be back. I had a nice long trip. Went almost 5,000 miles, but it was fun. Had some good company. A little tight at times, but some good company. I preached two different sermons on this trip, one at Colorado and one in Michigan. And part one was at Colorado, part two at Michigan, and this is part three. Basically with the same title. And so I'm going to get right to this and start off. So, but this one, of course, as you can see, I'm getting ready to go to Mexico. I'm going to go Thursday. And so you're going to have to bear with me, but you don't have to worry about what's on there. So what that says is, no hay tal cosa como un dragón, parte tres. There's no such thing as a dragon, part three. I found this, or I think I was in the car, I can't remember if I was with my wife and Ronnie at the time. They were coming back from Independence. And we were listening to an audible book, and the title of this book was in there. And as I listened to his explanation and everything, I thought, oh, boy, I can use this for a sermon. I really like this. And so that's what this is all about, is this particular thing. But it's not, you know, at first you may have your doubts. And but what I want to do, I'm going to read you this story that we find in this book. There's no such thing as a dragon. And luckily, we get to kind of look and see at the book picture at this time. So I don't know if I'm breaking copyright laws. I'm sure I am. The words aren't, because I translated the words. So I guess they're mine. And I don't know if you even have to have approval to do that. But what this says is, Billy Bixby was rather surprised when he woke up one morning and found a dragon in his room. It was a small dragon, about the size of a kitten. So you see Bill Bixby with his eyes all open there, and he's looking at a dragon that's smiling back at him on the foot of his bed, about the size of a kitten, it says. Page 2. It says, the dragon wagged its tail happily when Billy patted its head. Billy went downstairs to tell his mother there, and she said, there's no such thing as a dragon, said Billy's mother. And she said it like she meant it. She's busy, you can see, mixing eggs or something. So, it says, Billy went back to his room and began to dress. The dragon came close to Billy and wagged its tail, but Billy didn't pat it. If there's no such thing as something, it's silly to pat it on the head. Billy washed his face and hands and went down to breakfast. The dragon went along. It was bigger now, almost the size of a dog. Billy sat down at the table. The dragon sat down on the table. This sort of thing was not usually permitted, but there wasn't much Billy's mother could do about it. She had already said there was no such thing as a dragon. And if there's no such thing, you can't tell it to get down off the table. Mother made some pancakes for Billy, but the dragon ate them all. Mother made some more. But the dragon ate those too. Mother kept making pancakes until she ran out of batter. Billy only got one of them, but he said that was all he really wanted anyway. You see him down there hiding under the table, eating his one pancake. And the dragon has eaten everything that Mother fixed, except for one pancake. Billy went upstairs to brush his teeth. Mother started clearing the table. The dragon, who was quite as big as Mother by this time, made himself comfortable on the hall rug and went to sleep. By the time Billy came back downstairs, the dragon had grown so much he filled the hall. Billy had to go around by way of the living room to get to where his mother was. "I didn't know dragons grew so fast," said Billy. "There's no such thing as a dragon," said Mother firmly. Cleaning the downstairs took Mother all morning, what with the dragon in the way, and having to climb in and out of windows to get from room to room. See, they're cleaning under the dragon's tail, ignoring its existence. Am I behind? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Sorry. I need to be paying attention. I'm glad you're paying attention. All right. So I got your attention anyway. All right. So he's climbing out of the windows. Here we are. By noon, the dragon filled the house. Its head hung out the front door, its tail hung out the back door, and there wasn't a room in the house that didn't have some part of the dragon in it. So we see now that the neighbors are beginning to notice. There's a woman pushing her baby, and she's looking over at the dragon. It's beginning to affect the neighborhood. The mailman When the dragon awoke from his nap, he was hungry. A bakery truck went by. The smell of fresh bread was more than the dragon could resist. The dragon ran down the street after the bakery truck. The house went along, of course, like the shell of a snail. Doesn't look like that guy in the bread truck has any idea about what's about ready to happen. The mailman was just coming up the path with some mail for the Bixbys when their house rushed past him and headed down the street. He chased the Bixby's house for a few blocks, but he couldn't catch it. When Mr. Bixby came home for lunch, the first thing he noticed was that the house was gone. Luckily, one of the neighbors was able to tell him which way it went. I think it's the same woman who was pushing the baby down the street, personally. Mr. Bixby got in his car and went looking for the house. He studied all the houses as he drove along. Finally, he saw one that looked familiar. Billy and Mrs. Bixby were waving from an upstairs window. And there's the ruined bread truck down there on the bottom, middle of the page there. Mr. Bixby climbed over the dragon's head onto the porch roof and through the upstairs window. "How did this happen?" Mr. Bixby asked. "It was the dragon," said Billy. "There's no such thing," Mother started to say. "There is a dragon," Billy insisted. "A very big dragon." And Billy patted the dragon on the head. The dragon wagged its tail happily. Then, even faster than it had grown, the dragon started getting smaller. Soon, you see that they're hauling off the poor bread truck there. Soon it was kitten-sized again. "I don't mind dragons this size," said Mother. "Why did it have to grow so big?" "I'm not sure," said Billy, "but I think it just wanted to be noticed." So, you know, for the purposes of this sermon, you know, what exactly do I think?
Yeah.
If I say it? Oh, okay, sure. I don't know who the publishing company is. Yeah. All right, well, the author's name is Jack Kent. This was published back in 1987 by Dragonfly Books. Okay. And when I went out and ordered this immediately after I heard that this man talking about this. So, what is this dragon? You know, it's usually, when I'm looking at it and thinking about it, I'm thinking that it has something to do with our human nature, you know, because it's always there. And if you don't take care of it, if you don't do what you need to do with your own human nature, it'll get the best of you. It keeps growing. You know, it could be applied to so many different things. It could be applied to sleeping too late in the morning, to drug addiction, to alcoholism, to gambling, to whatever in our lives that can take over our lives. So we do have to give it some attention, and it's always there. In the scriptures, there's a mention of a dragon, and of course there's a place I think it's talking about the devil, but there's another one here. In Isaiah chapter 51, verse 9, it says, "Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Lord, awake as in ancient days. In the generations of old, art thou not it that hath cut Rahab and wounded the dragon? Art thou not it which hath dried the sea, the waters of the great deep, that hath made the depths of the sea a way for the ransom to pass over?" This particular verse, I believe, is referring to Egypt and Rahab and the dragon. The dragon refers to the Nile River. You know, it that's what it was at that time. So here I have a scripture that I think applies to what we're talking about. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 50, "Now say this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, neither doth corruption inherit incorruption." Galatians 5, verse 17, "For the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would." You know, no matter where we go, we have to, I think one of the problems, you know, we were talking about this today, I think, in Sunday school to some extent, and how, by our culture today, sometimes we have trouble facing the world. We'd like it to be perfect in every way possible, but it's certainly not, and it certainly wasn't possible in history. The world was a very hard place, a very difficult place, but our forefathers and the patriarchs in the Old Testament, they faced a very harsh world. We find out where there was a time when Jacob, he was a usurper. His name was changed from usurper to the Prince of God, to a Prince of God. And the world teaches us, you know, today that you can be a victim or a predator. At least that's what I've heard. That, you know, you're either going to be dominant or you're going to be the victim in this world. But the gospel teaches us a very different set of rules. In Matthew 10 and 16, Jesus said, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." It sounds like the two are conflicting a great deal, but they're not. We're talking about a spiritual life, about controlling our natures in life, and there's no other way. We can never get out or away from this particular concept. In Philippians 2 and 15, "That ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world." You know, Jacob, at one time in his life, he was very cunning. He was plotting. He did all kinds of things. He lied. He deceived. But when he left the service of his father-in-law after about 14 years of indentured servitude, He came across this place and where he saw a vision, and he wrestled, it says, with an angel all night long. And the angel gave him a blessing and changed his name from usurper to Prince of God. And I think he changed from that moment on. I think he was a different person in many respects. Began, because he got older, he had to rely more on the Lord and have faith in him. Decisions. We can have freedom or slavery. In John 8:34-36, Jesus answered them, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. And the servant abideth not in the house forever, but the Son abideth ever. If the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed." Christ puts before us this idea. We have these decisions to make, and we can be free in the decisions, or we can be in slavery to our own desires, our own wants, our own lusts. The Book of Mormon tells us we're free to choose. In 2 Nephi 1 and 1:14, "But behold, all things have been done in the wisdom of him who knoweth all things. Adam fell that men might be, and men are, that they might have joy. And the Messiah cometh in the fullness of time, that he might redeem the children of men from the fall." And because that they are redeemed from the fall, they have become free forever, knowing good from evil, to act for themselves and not to be acted upon, save it be by the punishment of the Lord at the great and last day, according to the commandments which God hath given. "Wherefore men are free according to the flesh, and all things are given them which are expedient unto man. And they are free to choose liberty and eternal life through the great mediator of all men, or to choose captivity and death according to the captivity and power of the devil. For he seeketh that all men might be miserable like unto himself." We read here, Jesus can make us free. In John 8:31-32, it says that, "If you continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." After living for about 66 years now, I believe this more and more all the time, that as far as my feelings and my emotions in life, they enslave you, in my opinion. My desires, hungers, or whatever it might be, they enslave me. But God's word has been a great blessing to me and has freed me, and his spirit has given me a great freedom. As I think, you know, and as I was thinking about this particular sermon and this idea, this concept, I was brought to my mind Joseph. And as I thought about him, I had a lot of thoughts concerning him. We have a great test and a trial in these last days. And this particular scripture tells us, you know, something that we're supposed to do in life. And it really tells us that we need to take upon us responsibility, to be responsible for the people that are around us, to be responsible for the community that is around us, to be responsible for everything, to be responsible for your jobs. But ever since this particular challenge that Christ has given to us in Matthew 24 about the day that we live in is something that I hope you will take to your heart and consider. And it says, "Who then is a faithful and wise servant?" This is Matthew 24, 45-51. "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But, and if that servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is the challenge that we have, an instruction specifically for our day. to take care of your everyday responsibilities in life, to make sure that your family has what it needs, to make sure, and when you're looking in your life, and that story that I read, you know, to me, the woman, obviously, she was denying what was wrong, whatever it was, she was denying it, and Dad was completely oblivious. You know, he was surprised when he saw it. But Billy saw it. He felt that there was something in his life that he was aware of, and I don't know what it was. There was something there, something taking place in his life, and parents need to be always vigilant in this particular regard. Taking care of, you know, it doesn't say that we have to store up food for 7 years and things like that, but it tells us specific things that Jesus instructed us to do. In the Old Testament, we see that one person can make a difference. This is something that Joseph said when he was talking to his brothers, and after they had sold him and they had been reunited and brought back and saved in Egypt. And he said, "But as for you," in Genesis 50 and 20, "but as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive." They meant to kill him, to do him harm. But I think that this particular story about Joseph, to me, Joseph is, I think, my greatest hero in the Bible, other than the Lord himself. As I look at his life, from the time that he was a young man, 17 years old, his life was extremely tumultuous. He found the same things that we find when our kids, like I understand some of our kids are going out to work now, they've got jobs, and they're getting their first jobs, and they're going out in the world, and he had this experience right from the very beginning, right from the time when he began to be responsible in his life, he found trouble. And in Genesis 37 and 1, we read this story, and it says, "Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. And these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought unto his father their evil report." He told on them for something they had done. You know, whenever we go out in the world, you have to make something, you begin making these decisions. The first thing you find out is that, well, our brother Jared talked about it a lot. He gave us a lot of stories. Everybody isn't doing the right thing. And Joseph saw it, and he squealed. He told. And most of us don't like someone who tells or squeals, but here we find this person who sees what he thinks is wrong, and immediately he goes and tells his father that something's wrong. You know, every time you go into the working world, you got to make some sort of decision. You know, our brother told us today that he makes a decision to do his work. But if he was to go around, I wonder what would happen if he went around and say, "Well, this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy, they weren't working." Well, that'd be a tough situation. Might get himself killed. But we have to make these decisions, these difficult decisions. They're not easy. But this man, Joseph, his character was something that God could use. So if we go on, it says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors." So apparently in the original, the word "many" is not there, but he made him a coat of colors. So we know there's more than one. How many there was, I don't know. But he made them this, gave him this preferential treatment. And of course, back then, if you had a coat, you probably wore it most of the time. You wore whatever you had on, because everyone didn't have all the things that we have. They didn't have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, and 20 changes of clothing. They had one change or two changes, maybe. And he wore this all the time. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him. and could not speak peaceably unto him. And I found, when I went to work, and when they found out I was a Christian, if they didn't hate me, then I was mistaken, because it just seemed to me that these people hated me. They did everything. I would try to do something. I'd try and do things right for them, but it just appeared to me that they hated me because I was a Christian. So what were all the characteristics that Joseph had that God could use? You know, he had a character that was different. He was honest. I think he had integrity, the things that were done in secret. He would let be known. He had a spirituality. He had courage. He had some type of education. His father was obviously a wise man with flocks and things like that. He had some type of education. He was reliable when people gave him a job. His father made him swear to take his bones back, you know, when he passed away, when he was in Egypt, and he fulfilled that. He kept his father's flocks, but he had trouble with his brothers. In his spiritual life, immediately in that same chapter, we see that Joseph dreamed a dream in verse 5 in chapter 37 of Genesis. And he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaf stood round about, and made obeisance to my sheaf." And his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And yet he was always willing. There was something about his character. He was always willing to share something he believed was given to him. And he didn't understand it. He didn't know what it was about, but he did share it. And it cost him dearly. In verse 9, "And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying." He didn't forget it. You know, but their words, you know, what I found in my life is that things have been more difficult than anything else. It's usually been people's words. You know, I can be hurt, I can fall off a roof, all kinds of things, but people's words bother me more. And the psalmist made this one statement in Psalm 64, verse 3, "Who wet their tongue like a sword, and bind their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words." Isn't that true to you, usually? Bitter words sometimes hurt us more than anything else. And we have to be prepared when we go in life and fight all of the emotions that come upon us when someone uses bitter words against us, and especially when you go into the working place. If you're going to stand up for the Lord in some way, even by just doing your job, because I found that when I worked and I wasn't even paying attention to what people do, and I work and every now and then somebody said, "You're working too hard. You're making us all look bad." Well, I wasn't even trying to. And that's what they do. And that's what the world doesn't want you to be upright and to have a good character. They want you to do something else. But the boss does. Well, he was sold into slavery, and he was faithful in that slavery. In Genesis 37:13, "And Israel said unto Joseph, Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, Here am I." Interesting. He said, "Okay, I'll go. I'm happy to go." And he went without arguing. He had this quality about him. Yeah, sure, I'll go. I'll go talk to my brothers. And when he went there, and what happened? In verse 18, it says, and when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. We can drop down to verse 23 and 24. And it came to pass that when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And so for his obeying his father, this is what happened to him. And then the last verse I have on this page, verse 27, just part of it. Come and let us sell him. And his brethren were content. He was faithful in this slavery. He was faithful in this moment of time when he was greatly stressed. And in Genesis 37, 36, and the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. Well, here we see that what happened, he got sold by chance into the direct servitude beneath Pharaoh, beneath the king, in some sort of a contact with one of his principal officers. And the Lord is already beginning to work things out, but certainly to him it didn't look that way. In verse chapter 39, verse 5, and it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And God blessed that house because Joseph was there. And this is exactly what we should do in the world. We should be a blessing wherever we go in this world. No matter what people say about us, we should be a blessing to the people that are around us, spiritually and temporally. In verse 9 of that chapter 39, and there is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And we know that Potiphar's wife tempted him, was chasing after him, trying to get him to submit to her, and he refused to do it because that would have been a sin. It was a sin against God and would have been betraying the trust that God had given to him. Betraying the trust. And so he was there all by himself doing the right thing because he believed in God. And this is what God asks us to do the right thing wherever we're at, to be a light in the world. He was faithful in prison. They put him in prison after this. In Genesis 39, 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. You imagine, now of course, I'm sure they had more than one prison, but Pharaoh had his own personal prisons for his own personal prisoners, and that's where they put him. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. And they prospered. He was a blessing to those prisoners that were there. He was a blessing to the master of the prison. He was a blessing wherever he went. And he was there for years. He was still spiritual in prison when Pharaoh's butler and baker were imprisoned in Pharaoh's private prison. In Genesis 40, 6 through 8, we read this, and Joseph came in unto them, to the baker and to the butler, in the morning after he had known them, and he'd been taking care of them, and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly today? And they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me then them, I pray thee. You know, he was truthful to them. He told good news to one person and bad news to the other. And when we're in the service of God, you have to tell the truth. You have to do what's right. You have to say, even if it bothers people. You have to say the right thing at the right time. You have to be truthful what God has in store for people. And you can't say, you know, it's all right, everything's all right, because we don't know if everything's going to be all right. We can't make such a promise in this world. We don't have that right. But God opened the door to that prison. In Genesis 40:23, yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. In other words, he forgot him after he had told him that, and the butler forgot all about Joseph, and he was there for a couple of more years. It says in Genesis 40:1, and it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. In Genesis 41:14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph after the butler finally remembered, called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. In the 16th verse, and Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And in this condition, he didn't even claim to the credit. He said, God can do this. God can answer your need and give you the answer that you need. It's God that does these kind of things. As a result of this, of course, he became a provider for Egypt and for his family. And in Genesis 41:46, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And he was taking care of that business. And so from the time he was 17, there were 13 years that passed with all kinds of problems. You know, we have to be patient when you go in the world, not expecting everything to happen to us all at once. It took a long time and a lot of suffering upon his part for these things to work out, for God to bless him. But he certainly had to fight his own feelings and his own emotions and his thoughts during that whole time so that he could be a blessing to others. And he made sacrifices, and he lived with the things that were forced upon him. And he didn't just assume he had to escape from all of them. He worked with whatever he had at the time. He became a provider for his family after all this took place. And it says here in Genesis 41:57, and all countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all lands. In chapter 43, verse 1, and the famine was sore in the land. God sometimes makes problems in this world and in the lives of people, and there are opportunities to do something. And I am of the opinion that when we pray for patience, that God gives us the opportunity quickly and prove our patience and to make us impatient, to show how weak we are, to make us be humble before Him. I am of the opinion that so many things that happen to us, God is bringing, because He loves His children, He brings to the surface every problem that we have. He brings it to our minds. He brings it to the attention of others, just like that dragon. All of a sudden, the neighbors see it. You know, you can't control your temper. Everybody finds out. You can't control your children, and the whole world finds out. You can't control what you eat or what you drink, and the whole world begins to know. And bringing these things so that you can begin to work on the temporal things of your life for a spiritual purpose. And he moves in the affairs of men to provide a way for his children to serve him by serving the world. Well, this is it. I don't have anything else. The last thing that he did to me that was the most important above everything else was that he forgave. He forgave his brothers. He forgave them for what they had done. He wept when they finally came back into his presence, and that took a whole lot of working and trying to get his family back to be with him so he could take care of them for a few years in the future. and he forgave them. And nothing matters if we cannot be forgiven or if we cannot forgive. It's all it's a vain unless we are able ourselves to forgive. So this is the thing that was brought to me, this my attention and my mind, were these attributes that Joseph had in his life, how he lived with the problems of the world, how he controlled the dragons of his own life, the things that were out of control, how he kept them in control. In Genesis 45, 4 to 6, "And Joseph said unto his brethren, Come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. And for these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest." So he was telling, you know, it basically took about 2 years to get this worked out with his family. It took time when they ran out of food, and they ran out of food a second time. It took time for him to work all this out. So he preserved them. He forgave them. He suffered for them. He was faithful for them. He fulfilled a promise for his father, taking his bones back. And he also asked them to take his bones back when they left Egypt, which is something, and the reason why I think this is so important is because this particular story about Joseph, it really applies to our day. It applies to the bones of Joseph, the house of Israel that's scattered throughout the world. Our job is going to be to try and bring them back. And I believe the Lord is doing this now. He's doing this and bringing them back. But it requires that we are able to forgive, that we are able to suffer, that we're able to give of our time, give of our resources. It requires these things of us as well. So I leave this with you, and I ask that you will deal kindly with my little story about the dragon, and that you will think about some of the things which I have said for your own life and how you can best apply and use them maybe in your own world and how they might apply to you. And I do ask, you know, if this was the last time I was ever to speak to you, I think, you know, the Lord has given me a certain testimony in my life, because I was a person who in my youth, I was overcome by emotions, by thoughts, by ideas, by concepts, and it took quite a while for the Lord to help me to get over those things and to become a man, to put them away. And I feel like the Lord has given me this great gift, and I've always wanted to share it. And I hope that God will bless you and prosper you. So if you don't see him again, if something happens when I'm down in Mexico and you don't ever see me again, I would pray that we would be adults always. May God bless you and pour out his Spirit upon you from now and forevermore.